And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
And a feared. Here on Declare Your Independence, and me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAU default studios of Freedoms of the Nast, freedomsphoenix.com. Woo, that was a good one. All right, that was special for our guest in the second hour here, Tim Ball. Professor Ball is a retired professor at the University of Winnipeg in Canada. He earned a doctorate of science at Queen Mary College, University of London, was chairman of the Canadian Committee on Climate Fluctuations, chairman of the Winnipeg Advisory Committee on Hazardous Waste, has authored 53 science papers, and is the author of The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. Professor Ball says that human-caused global warming is the biggest deception in history. And he was sued. They go, oh, Michael Mann, Penn State University professor, had the hockey stick of we're all going to die, you know, climate warming, global warming, whatever. And Tim got in trouble. He said, man, instead of teaching at Penn State, he should be in the state pen. Oh, that was too clever. They got to go sue him, get him. And then if you're suing anybody for saying something nice and violating somebody's self-esteem in Canada, you lose, unless you're Tim Ball. And he won. So we talked about that before, but what I wanted to talk to him about this is with that win, with that, I want to know how much attention he's getting now, how many people are being educated, what that, now he won, and there's crickets, because somebody just came out and said, hey, polar bears are thriving, and you're fired. So this is how it works. I'm just, oh, how far off am I, Tim?
I'm fine, thank you.
No, when I go, you complain about, you say the polar bears are doing well and you get fired. I mean, did that surprise you?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you call today because today Michael Mann is back in court. The National Review, he sued the National Review, and that case is going is being considered by the Supreme Court today. And, of course, he's making the same argument.
Okay,
that,
Supreme Court of the U.S. or in Canada?
No, in the U.S.
Okay, so I don't know anything about this. He sued him for what?
Well, what he always sues everybody for, that he's being defamed.
Okay, the review did what? They cited your case?
Well, I obviously, and I know that... the lawyers down there have been in contact with my lawyers and got all the information there. So, well, first of all, I don't see how in the United States you can bring a lawsuit like this because of free speech.
I don't know. Cause you know, judges, cause the way anybody can file anything, you know, that is, it's not, within the clerk, I went through this before because I've had a lot of suits that, you know, that I file against government for, I've been to, you know, the Ninth Circuit, you know, before, argued oral argument myself before the Ninth Circuit, and I've been to Arizona Supreme Court 3 times. I got a dozen other men. I'm just made it because I want them to say it. You got to say it. I go, do you really are saying that? Yes, we are. Okay, I just want you to say it. You didn't win. Yeah, I did. I wanted them to say it. That was my whole point of this. Now, the thing is that when you file a suit, they aren't allowed as a judiciary because you have legislative, executive, judicial. They're separate powers. When you file it, that's the clerk. That's not really the court. They're just doing the executive of filing it. Then it's up to the judge to say, all right, we're dismissing it because that sucks. You can't preemptively stop them from filing it. But if you can get the right judge for they, them, those, well, then they go, absolutely, we're going to sue manufacturers of guns for a shooting of the whatever the hell. I mean, you know, it's always the judges, which is why they're so scared of Trump. And, oh, my goodness, you know, if Ginsburg gets replaced, it's 7-2 now, and they're freaking. So I that's your answer, because they got the judges in their pockets.
Well, there's two sides to this story. One is the defamation of character, saying, oh, you know, you don't know your science. And then there's the science itself. I mean, it would be very simple for me to walk into the court and explain to them in about 20 minutes how this whole deception that CO2 is causing global warming, or human CO2 is causing global warming, was created. And one of the things that people don't understand is that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the United Nations agency, which is the source of all this stuff, did not look at climate change. They only looked at human-caused climate change, which, of course, is a vastly different question than what people suppose. And so as soon as you say, well, we're only looking at human-caused climate change, you leave out things, minor things like the sun. And so the whole United Nations argument that humans are causing global warming and or climate change is based upon a very, very, very narrow definition. And, of course, that's the result you're going to get. If they said, no, we're going to look at climate change, then they would discover that the sun explains about 98% of all long-term climate change.
You know, we've mentioned this before, and I think you knew her name, and I didn't get it. It was a woman, a Harvard astrophysicist that I had on in, like, God, 2005, 2007.
Judith Curry?
I don't know. Judith Curry. She was saying, it's the sun, you morons. You know?
Yep.
Yep. Judith. Yep. What happened to her?
Curry. Well, basically, gradually, as this story has been perpetuated, and this is why I'm amazed that man is still doing it. I mean, as I say, he lost a lawsuit to me because he didn't produce any evidence. And whereas I did, and the court said, well, okay, you gave us evidence, he didn't, you win. And of course, he couldn't produce the evidence because he knows. That's what's frightening about this. These people know what is wrong with the science, or how narrow the definition of the science is that they're using. But this is a political agenda. This is all about, you know, any time that you see any government using the environment for their policy and the basis of their agendas, it's all about total government control. And
so that's their real agenda.
Yeah, that's the real agenda. Because, you see, what's the one thing we all will joke about? The sky is falling. Chicken Little. That's where it originates from. And that you need me to protect you from the sky falling, and therefore give me total control over everything you do. That's the game. And, of course, with CO2, it got narrowed down to that because that's the byproduct of industry. And what they wanted to do was to shut down particularly U.S. industry and saying that you're producing this CO2 and it's causing global warming, and therefore that gives us the right to shut you down.
Okay, no, I think this is what I saw, is that was the excuse and how they were wanting to monetize it with this carbon tax credit thing that Goldman Sachs was going to market on the market of how much you could pollute and the CO2 measurement of, we're just going to, you know, another pipeline of taxes and all runs to Goldman Sachs or something. I was like, what the heck? I looked this up. Judith Curry retires, citing craziness of climate science. This is in 17. One of the climate scientists' most vocal critics is leaving academia because of what she calls the poisonous nature of the scientific discussion around human-caused global warming. Thank you for that. We'll be right back.
Crimes of the Crown by Captain Mark. The Crown casts the world in shadow and claims to be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories. While I say these hobgoblins are imaginary. I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The Crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The Crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the Crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find.
Yeah, I'm going to have Donna try and get Judith. The Van Cleves are the ones that told me about her. They said, look, it's a son. And when I interviewed her, she knew this. You know, so see if you can get in contact with her again. Send her the... a list of the shows that I've done with Tim and the one that I did with her, and that you know, we'd like to get an update and kind of is turning around and vindicated of whatever the hell, you know, see if she'll come on. Thanks. Yeah, I really enjoyed a conversation with her. She was the first one that, you know, when I really started getting what the hell is going on, and she was like you, man. Yeah. She called this. She says, no, this is crap, and it's going to be crap, and it's going, and she goes, it's going to start getting cold. What the hell are they going to do then? So when Al Gore came, he did his inconvenient whatever campaign. He was at some big arena down there for the Suns, Phoenix Suns arena, and they came in, and a lot of guys using our headquarters. We had a workshop there making all these signs and so on. They go, Ernie, what do you want your sign to say? I go, one, I'm not going, but if you want to make a sign for me, I want a big question that just says, what happens when it gets cold? Because I knew that's what was going to happen, and it's just the sun will start going into its, you know, that thermonuclear device in the sky might have something to do with something, you know. And I'm going, wow, these guys are. So then when it started to do that, they're going, oh, that's just the global, that's why they had to do that movie about everything freeze because of global warming or something. I mean, it's like, what the hell is going on, man? So anyway,
well, of course, they control these things by the definitions and assumptions that they make. And I'll read out when we get back on the air the definition of climate change that these people were given.
Yeah, it's like the hippy-dippy weatherman that George Carlin was. He goes, there will be some weather today. I mean, you know, it's just, I'm there's something else behind this. You had to have come to what their goal really is. This is just a mechanism so they can tax, you know, business or something.
It's control. It's all about control of industry and an American wealth.
Okay, that's why? To get a cut of it? To stop it? In competition, they want China to win or something? I mean, is it just they're just looking for a drain? You know, some kind of a hookup to their hose to take your money? I mean, is it that they're just funding themselves? Is that it? They're just looking to make a living?
It's a total left-wing agenda. And America is seen as the great evil, and that they've achieved their power and wealth by using fossil fuels and at the expense of every other nation on the planet. That's what it's all about.
All right. You know, it seems to me it's just, I mean, yeah, that's their excuse. But what they're really doing is they just want to plug into the economy. You know, they just want to get their free cut of I passed the law. You know, and this is how they do
it. There's no question that every politician in the world is always looking for new places to tax you.
All right, here we come.
And carbon tax is a nice...
602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, I'm feeling it. Tim Ball's got a beat on it, too! What the emotion? Am I stand for the polar bear? You know, what are they working? It's all about the feels. Yeah.
Talk about things and nobody cares.
They're going to make you care. You got to you gotta care, because you know polar bears. So this is, you know, we were in the break, we were talking, and Tim was going right into the coming back from the show, and I want him to finish his thought here because he's getting all emotional. And I'm going, all right, what were you saying? The point that I'm making is that this global warming, blah 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 blah, carbon tax. This, I could see it. It was another plug into the economy that had a hose that went off to somewhere for something, and they made a bunch of money. And if they could do this carbon thing, and we could tax industry, if they are making electric, if they're making anything, if they are moving around and using energy, gosh darn it, we get a cut of that and fill in the blank reason why, and they're filthy, stinking rich on the economy of the world, and we are going to tax the world. And if they get away with that, you know, I mean, damn, you will never put these guys back in the bottle. So I'm going, all right, I am of the opinion that this, along with 15 gazillion other reasons they'll come up with, is just another excuse for them to tax the planet and they be the beneficiaries of it. They, them, those that won't leave me alone. And your observation is what, Mr. Professor Ball?
Well, the answer is that politicians will tax anything they can. They're the only two things they're good at is finding new ways to tax you and new ways to collect the money. And also, well, so we're going to have three things: waste the money. And of course, the carbon tax, if you say, well, look, if you don't agree with this, we're saving the planet. And you don't want to save the planet? Say, well, yes, I do, but there's no
from
scientific
you.
Justification.
I want to save it from you guys, you sorry excuses for. You know, this is, do me a favor, Professor, just pull back from your microphone a little bit. I can turn you up here. You're over-modulating a little bit. You know?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm not getting a good signal from you either, so it's working both ways.
Okay, well, we'll muddle through. It's good enough. All right, what I want to
muddle through.
What the future is. What? I mean, this is, it seems, you know, I asked this of one of my guests, Paul Rosenberg, one time, and I go, you think we're at peak tyranny? You know, and because you just see they're getting outed, and he goes, no, you're never at peak tyranny, but I think we're at peak obedience. That's where I see that people are getting enough information. Professor Ball, you're inspiring a lot of people. You're standing up to. You went through a lot of sacrifice. Did you come out okay? Did you get? I know you got like your legal costs and everything. Did you get anything extra? Did you have? Are you guys like good in your retirement? That we're not going to be sending you cat food or anything?
No. The only reward in this, yeah, I mean, certainly winning the lawsuits and getting costs assigned is helpful, because I mean, basically, before I started getting financial help, I used up all my savings. But I'm not complaining about that. My wife and I talked about it. We knew what we were doing when we got into this fight. But what I'm more pleased about is more and more people are starting to look at the issue and ask the questions and try and answer the questions that I ask them. For example, a very simple one is, why CO2? It's only 4% of the greenhouse gases. Why don't you look at water vapor, which is 95% of the greenhouse gases? How can you ignore 95% of the greenhouse effect and focus on CO2? So these sorts of questions make people go back and look at the science and what's going on. Of course, the answer is that humans do produce water vapor, but the amount that they put into the atmosphere relative to the total amount in the atmosphere is very small. So they say, well, it's so small that we can ignore it. Well, sorry, you've only got to change water vapor in the atmosphere by 2%, and it equals all the effect of CO2. But these are the scientific things that they know people don't know
about, know,
and don't understand.
Before it was climate, it was the ozone layer. And I remember there was a book called A Hole in the Ozone Theory or something like that. And it was during that time, I'm kind of asking questions. And with ozone and CO2 and all the other stuff, one volcano farts and it totally blows up the whole thing and way more than and so on. And how come we're not dead then?
Well, of course, this is the way that you make your name in science, or you get research funding, is you pick on something and say, hey, it's threatening the world, fund me. And you look at the billions, literally billions of dollars that goes to climate and environmental funding every year. This is the game that's going on. And if you just take the funding out of it, there is no issue.
Yeah.
But as I said, the way that they narrow these things down is by the terms of reference, the definition that they give to it. I mean, I remember when one of the big conspiracy theories on the internet now, because the internet is a beautiful vehicle for creating these things, was when they talked to Justice Warren about the who killed Kennedy, and why is it still an issue? They said to him, why didn't you look at the mafia connection in Dallas and Jack Ruby? And he simply said, it wasn't in my terms of reference.
What does that mean?
I knew what he was saying. See, I knew what he was saying, but most people didn't realize the implications of that. So these
well, what does he mean, terms of reference? What does terms of reference mean? What does that mean?
Well, the government, when they set up the Warren Commission, the government are the people that set the what you look at. Okay, so for example, here's the
sun is eliminated as one of their terms of reference.
Yeah, when Warren was asked about it on ABC, they said, why didn't you look at the Dallas and Jack Ruby? And he said, it wasn't in my terms of reference. In other words, I couldn't go there. And this is the same thing with the United Nations. This is true, by the way, of every government commission or inquiry. It is limited and controlled. People think, oh, this is good. We've got a commission, we're going to get it away from the politics. But in fact, it gives the government even greater control, because they're the ones that define what these people look at. Now, just to read out the United Nations, this is the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And this was put forward in 1992, and they said, that a change of climate which is attributed directly or indirectly to human activity that alters the composition of the global atmosphere and which is in addition to natural climate variability observed over considerable time periods. In other words, they said only look at human causes. Well, you can't do that if you don't know what natural causes are, and we don't. But this is how they control and limit these inquiries.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the reason I said that is like, Judith Curry was taking into account, of course, that thermonuclear device in the freaking space, and says it's the sun. You know, this. How come you're not using anything from the, you're not even using, it's not in your frame of reference?
Don't you hate that feeling in the pit of...
Yeah, or whatever reference thing you're talking about. I mean, to not include the sun, they're really... You know, over my 30 years of being kind of, you know, involved and paying attention, it has been amazing how much they, them, those use the media, because they control the media, they buy the media, and they just, you know, shovel crap down our throat and expect us to just keep taking it. It's amazing to me how many people do. And it's all this, some psychology hurting instinct of being accepted, and somebody says because they got a lab coat, a shiny badge, or a TV show or something, and they just believe just about anything right up until they don't believe anything anymore. And I'm getting to the point is that they think their defenses now don't believe anything. What we say, they say, is just mud. Then you have the information on the internet and you go get it. Now they're starting to purge the internet. We're in Orwell's 1984 as a training manual, a template or something. So I just had Daniel McAdams on in the first hour. He does the Liberty Report with Ron Paul. And my whole thing is that we're going to do what we can to help them and a lot of other people putting their data on a forever internet of that can't go away kind of stuff. Because I can see that's what's happening. We've redone our search engine internally on Freedom's Phoenix. It's, you know, for finding the information that we want, it's better than Google. Google hides stuff now. It is amazing. And we just sit back and go, well, you know, I guess, whatever. You know, but at some point, it starts to turn. you start winning your lawsuits. Other people start. It starts getting outed. They're not able to control all the judges anymore. The Supreme Court starts to shift. Right. The side effect is Trump. And they got, whether you're a Trump supporter or not, you know, it's like all these other, like Bolivia. They just come in and say, nope, we're gonna do a regime change in America because we got practice and other, but we're just going to do it. And I'm going, wow. So watching from Canada, what are you seeing that's going on with this Trump thing and Trudeau getting reelected? I mean, you know, you got an opinion on all the politics?
Well, yeah, and of course, Trudeau is still pushing the climate change thing. Canada is totally committed to it. And of course, who does he rely on? He relies on the bureaucrats. Well, the bureaucrats are the ones that are created and are pushing this agenda. This is a classic example of fake news and fake news created by the deep state. And it's on a global scale, and it's been going on for 60 years now. And until we break that cycle and get completely independent people to look at it and say what's going on, you're not going to get away from this. The government, certainly in most, well, and even America, most research funding comes from the government. And that therefore they fund only those things that are going to support their political positions on an issue.
And we will be ruled by a scientific, technological elite.
Yep.
Eisenhower warned, it wasn't about military-industrial complex. That was the side effect of this. He's going, look, the intellectual curiosity and guy in his garage is replaced with a government grant. And we got to be wary of being ruled by a scientific technological elite. And the side effect of that would be this military-industrial complex thing. So I'm going, keep making it the military-industrial complex, kept focusing on that. And I go, no, that's not what he said. What he said was just what you're talking about, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, that's exactly the point we've reached, where the government are controlling what the science that is done, because then they produce the science that supports their political arguments. It's a vicious circle.
And then they dumb down everybody and not understand anything. All right, we're coming back in now.
Sorry, we've got a very bad line here, so I apologize for that.
It's working out well. Here we go. And we're back. Yeah, Dr. Paul and I, yakking it here. I'm just, this is a, I keep going back to Eisenhower when everybody kept saying the military-industrial complex, and he's talking about it.
Yep.
And I think that's what they wanted people to think, and it kind of put focus on that and so on. And, of course, it's a problem. But it's a side effect of what? We are to be ruled by a scientific technological elite. Eisenhower warned. He says, look, what's going to happen is the intellectual curiosity of individuals in their garage making better batteries and whatever, you know, that's going to be replaced by a government grant. They're going to take anybody doing anything, oh, yeah, they suck you into the man and you got to do this. And I found that out when I was doing some carbon nanotube stuff and looking for at the Arizona State University, somebody's got to know something about something. And I was talking, I finally found one guy. And all he did is he qualified for a grant to look for natural occurring carbon nanotubes in plant life. And I'm going, you know, that's it? And then what have you done? What have you found out? Well, we're kind of working on research. Nothing. It was just something to do with global warming. And if it had global warming and plants and the carbon of the water, I'm like, you know, you all are so corrupted. This is what co-opted. What happened was I'm looking at Eisenhower, what he warned of, we're going to be the curiosity and chalkboards and universities and garages is going to be replaced with seeking of a government grant. And those grants are going to be granted based on what they want. And then the side effect will be this military-industrial complex. It was the exactly what Professor Ball is talking about is what he warned us of. And has it gotten any better? You know, is the internet starting to, the people starting to get it? Right in time for them to shut it down? Help me out here. What's the future, Professor?
Well, okay, but just to back up all that you said, I watched it change from you got promoted based on the publications that you had to you got promoted on the amount of funding that you brought into the university, because the universities discovered they could scrape 35-40% off the top of your research funding. So you then became valuable to the university in terms of the amount of funding that you got. Going forward, the sun is continuing to cool and reduce in its activity. We're seeing very, very few sunspots, and we'll see a cooling trend continue till at least 2030.
Now, what is a sun cycle? It's like, what, every 13 average years, 11, something like that? Talk about the sun cycles, what we're talking about.
Well, the sun, of course, is we do get in our atmosphere, there is a little bit of heat that comes from inside the Earth. It's called geothermal heat, and so you see that in heat coming through the bottom of the oceans, but that is a very, very small percentage of the atmospheric heat. Almost 100% of the heat that we have on the Earth, the energy, heat energy, comes from the sun, and of course the sun varies in a series of cycles. It varies in terms of its distance to the Earth, called the Milankovitch cycles, and it also varies in terms of the heat and light that it puts out. So unless you consider those cycles, you're not possibly going to understand what is the basis of energy variation on the surface of the Earth. Now, in a very simple way, you can do it on a 24-hour basis. Because you get up in the morning, and what happens? The sun comes up, and the temperature, within 30 minutes, the temperature starts to go up. And then the sun reaches its maximum height at noon, but the maximum temperature of the day doesn't occur till 2 o'clock, because it takes time to heat the surface, which then in turn heats the atmosphere. And then as the sun goes down, of course, then you reach the minimum of temperature again sometime in the middle of the night. That's a 24-hour cycle. And that's not due to any change in CO2 over that 24-hour period. That's 100% due to the sun's variation. And so any study that ignores the sun can't possibly explain what is happening.
And that just seems so neon freaking obvious. I'm just, yep. You know, while we're talking here, I wrote down the name of Judith Curry and going through, and she wrote a book that was about, you know, for the layman. You know, there was, you know, climate change for laymen or something like that. And you put this in, I'm searching, it's stripped from the internet. I mean, there's references to it and, you know, newspaper articles making fun of it or whatever the heck. But man, it is just amazing how they are going after access of information. Is this talked about amongst your colleagues and you and in the movement that, you know, this access to 1984 memory holing of everything is happening?
Well, it is, and it's invaded into, as I said, who gets published, who gets promoted, and so it really becomes a total control of the universities, and anybody that steps outside of the prevailing wisdom or whatever the government want you to believe, it's just simply not going to get anywhere. My wife has said to me, you know, why didn't you go along with it? You could have got millions of dollars in research funding. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, I could have looked at it that way, but the problem is my parents raised me to go for the truth regardless of what the price was. And so this is the difficulty. When you put that much government money, and I believe it at one point it was something like $70 billion of government money per year in the U.S. going into climate research. And so, of course, that attracts people, and that attracts people that are going to say what the government wants to hear. And by the way, you mentioned the Google searches and so on. I learned very early, if you want to get your article read, you make sure that you put certain words in your title.
Oh, no, I saw that.
The keywords.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how this has changed the whole world, because the keywords determine who reads it and what the articles are about. So the minute that you go onto Google and you put in the keywords, yes, you get a lot of information, but you only get information related to those keywords. You put in different keywords, and this is what was her name? I've forgotten now. But anyway, she said, "Oh, I did a search. I put in global warming, and I got 925 articles, all that said that global warming is occurring." Well, of course, because that's what you asked. And Al Gore cites her numbers in his movie. But if you just add one word or change one word in the keyword search, you get a completely different result. But this is the problem, the side effects of what it, and this is the difficulty with the world. Everything that has benefit also has negative effects. And if you're not aware of those negative effects, they can end up destroying you. So you've got to look at what's the positive and what's the negative, and weigh those things. And certainly keyword searching has had a huge influence upon what people consider important and what they what not considered important.
Well, you know, even what we do when we put up our articles and so on, of course, it has a keyword function, and we can do the keywords, and automatically pulls from the headlines and the summary and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But those keywords are manipulated, and what can be done, or they just go, if it came from certain sites like Freedom's Phoenix or some others, that it's not included or put on the back page of your, maybe it's never there, or page 5 of whatever the heck. It is amazing how much power these guys have. And then there are other, like, you know, a lot of times I have to go to Start Page or DuckDuckGo or something like that. But Google has the better algorithm to see it, which means they also have the better opportunity to hide it. And I'm going, yep, and this became obvious to me about 9:10. It was getting really bad. So of our 400,000-plus articles that we have on Freedom's Phoenix covering this kind of stuff, we just upgraded our search engine, and we're better than Google for finding this kind of stuff. I'm going, wow, I knew it was out there. There it is. A story on USA Freaking Today or some blog post or some. We got it. With Dr. Ball. We'll be right back.
The overall picture in the real estate market today is one of frustration when you take many factors into consideration. The housing market pundits would have you believe that everything is okay, but the long-term trending on the real estate numbers say otherwise. You are starting to see another wave of commercial and retail center vacancies, which follows a downturn in the residential market. So when you are ready to sell your house, I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I can take some of the guesswork out of the home selling process, providing you with market trends in your area and detailing what you can expect before, during, and after the transaction. Being in the real estate business for almost 20 years now has afforded me knowledge of the market, networking with industry specialists along the way, and that includes professionals that can help after the sale to help protect your assets. So let's get moving today. Please feel free to call or message me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, or visit my webpage at donnahancock.com.
Okay, we got one more segment. And whatever you want to talk about or say, stay out of your way.
Yeah. Could I ask you to call me, because the line is still very bad? So if I hang up and you call me back, is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead. I'll have Donna. Yeah, I got it here. I can do it. All right,
okay.
Go ahead and hang up.
I'll hang up right now. Hello?
Yeah, I got you. Is it better?
Yeah, that's a better line.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds better. It's a little bit better, but it's still... If you pull away from the microphone, it...
Yeah, okay.
Because this is what you sound like. When you get up further from the microphone, it sounds like that, you know? So I can bring your volume up. Let's just pull back a little bit. All right, go ahead and test it now with your mouth away a little bit.
Okay, is that better?
Yes, much. Okay. Yeah, because I can bring up...
I put my double chins in the way.
All right. And yeah, I can bring it down up here without the muffling. All right. The last segment here, what do you want to make sure? I want to just, you know, all right, tell us what we need to know in the future of, and who needs to stay after school or something, you know, and I just leave it all to you.
I'm still hearing you very, very muffled and broken. Could I possibly phone you?
Let's go ahead and say it's okay for the show here. You know, I don't want to take the risk of the last segment here losing because we're coming back in just a little bit. But I'm just going to let you talk anyway, so you're not going to have to worry about it.
Okay.
All right. So, pinky swear. All right. Get the music. All right. Here, how about maybe it's my microphone. Listen to the feed from the network. How's this sound?
I realize you may feel differently, but my relationship with the people who call themselves the government is completely involuntary.
So how does that sound to you?
It's still a little broken, but that we can manage.
All right. Now, we've got one more segment. We'll do it. Yeah, that's why I like doing the Zoom and stuff digital. It's better than the phone line. You know, phone lines are... That's so old technology. But I like having the
backup. I thought I could get into Zoom, but I'd have to download it.
Yeah, no, it's a thing, but it's really worth. It's not that hard. It's pretty easy, you know. But you know, what do I know? All right, here we go.
FM, Rhodes. It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Professor Timothy Ball, winner of, there's a climate change guys. They just got to go get some, and you're not allowed without paying the price. They went up against a man and his wife that said, oh, yeah, you want to play? Let's play. And they go, damn it, I hate when they do that. But they still, you know, it's a war of lawsuits and how much by attrition they got all the money in the world to go spend on whatever, but. You know, if they can just grind individuals down that stick their head up, it's like they got the hammer and whatever nail sticks up out of the board, boom, they go after them. Well, in this segment, I want to make sure that Dr. Ball gets to, you know, chastise publicly whoever needs to be chastised, what the future is going to be, and, you know, my grandchildren. I mean, you know, you're going to be long gone when they're getting old. I don't know. They're going to have some technological make you live forever here in a couple of weeks. But, you know, I'm wanting to know. And then they'll go, oh, my God, that sure as did it. We got to kill a bunch of people so we can live forever and rule them. And then, but I wanted to kind of get a future look as you've been looking at, because climate change is a long-term thing that's way back and way in the future. And you think long-term in this kind of environment. Politically, climate, everything. The floor is yours, Dr. Ball. Tell us what we need to know and what's on your mind.
Okay, first of all, climate change, people think about it as something that was discovered back in the 70s or 80s. But in fact, climate change has always been going on. We never thought about climate prior to this modern environmental era. And of course, people started using the environment and environmental changes for political agendas, I've known for 50 years now the extent of climate change. Most people still have no idea. Most people still don't know that just about 15,000 years ago, which in the age of the Earth is virtually yesterday, there was a massive ice sheet that covered all of Canada and a good portion of the northern U.S. And that ice sheet melted in less than about 6,000 years. And while that ice was made up of water from the oceans were about 450 feet lower than they are today. And so the idea of change is relatively new in both science and the people's understanding. But when you start to look at the long term, what you see is that change, and not only change, but dramatic change, is the normal. I mean, if you think about it, 15,000 years ago, in terms of the history of the Earth, as I said, it's just yesterday, and yet here you had this massive ice sheet, and by the way, you also had ice sheets covering Europe and Russia, and all of that ice was made up of water that came out of the oceans, and as I said, you had an ocean that was 450 feet lower than today. So when people tell me, oh, well, the sea level's rising, yeah, tell me something I don't know. It's risen 450 feet in the last 9,000 years. What are you talking about? Oh, it's increased by a millimeter. Oh, good for you. You know, put these things in perspective. And of course, that's what is not happening. When you want to exploit something, and climate, by the way, is the perfect vehicle if you want a political agenda, because you can pick any period of climate and prove whatever you want. Oh, well, look here, here's my record, and it shows the temperature's increasing. When somebody else says, well, no, I took a slightly longer record, and it shows it's decreasing. And the important thing is that people are now starting to realize that change is going on all of the time, and it's going on far more rapidly than people understand. And as I said, if you think just 15,000 years ago, you've got an ice sheet covering North America that's bigger than the Antarctic ice sheet today. And so this is what people have to become aware of. And then they have to become aware of the fact that people who discovered this normal pattern are saying, oh, this is abnormal. Well, they don't actually say it's abnormal, but they say, oh, this is something that you didn't know, and therefore it's abnormal.
Yeah.
Everything that's going on in today's world in terms of the climate is normal and well within any long-term climate variability, but that's what's being exploited, because if you can show that the sky is falling, you can control governments and control the world, and that's what's happening.
Boom! Exploited to control and the peoples of... This thing about one of the solutions that they're looking for, of course, is... we got to get rid of several billion people and save planet Gaia or something. Is that a fear? I mean, is that all of a sudden they're going to have you walking into disruptor chambers, or are they already starting to do fertility restrictions and food and water and vaccines? Well, I mean, how far along are they on this quest?
Well, the underlying theme of all of this is overpopulation. And Paul Ehrlich, who wrote the book on the population bomb, and he was the guy that created Earth Day, and he of course Earth Day he chose as April 22nd, 1972 was the first Earth Day. Well, April 22nd he chose deliberately because that's the birthday of Lenin, and Paul Ehrlich. Right, and Paul Ehrlich wanted to have something that was threatening the whole world and was being caused by humans, and therefore that could be used to justify a total government control by a small group of people. And that's what this whole thing is about. It's about population control, and it's in numbers, but also population control in terms of politics and ideology and everything else. Now, the world is currently at about 7 billion people, and it is far from overpopulated. I mean, you can put all of that population in 1,000 square foot houses on 3,000 square foot lots, and they all fit into one half of Texas. Now, Texas might not like that, but that's the reality. It's the world is not overpopulated.
You know,
at Canada. Sorry?
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt.
No, I was going to say, look at Canada, and here we've got a population of equivalent to California in the second largest country in the world. I mean, I flew search and rescue all through northern and Arctic Canada, and I loved it when we had civilians on board, particularly Americans, and I said, look, we're going to cover 10,000 square miles today in our search. You won't see a single road, a single village, a single human in all of that area. So when you start to look at the world, the population are restricted to about five major areas, and those are the delta areas where the soil is adequate to support population. You look at Russia, for example. I mean, most of it is virtually uninhabitable, and yet it's the largest country on the planet. And so this idea that the world is overpopulated is just a complete myth, but it underlies the argument that, oh, well, that the world's overpopulated, they're using up the resources at too fast a rate, and that was the basis of the Club of Rome's argument. Therefore, we've got to reduce the population because they're using resources too fast. And then the other side of it is, well, there are too many people, and their CO2 is causing global warming. It's so absolute rubbish. When you look at natural sources of CO2, for example, the human portion, which by the way we don't know very accurately, but is a fraction of any natural source such as the ocean.
Well, what do we? So the future is going to be what? A realization after the information digestion of Generation Next of the worldwide, all of a sudden the next half of the population of the planet's going to get online and it's going to be there and we're all going to be saved because now we know? Or is it going to be, you're not allowed, you got to get your government ones and zero permit to learn anything?
Well, what's happening is, of course, the internet has become... and don't forget, until you had the internet, governments totally controlled all information that went to the public. And that, by the way, includes the media, the mainstream media. It was controlled by the governments. And you notice that whenever a revolution occurred in the country, the first thing they did was take over the television and the radio and and the media and so on. And so the internet, and by the way, I warn people, fight any attempt to control the internet, because that's the last bastion of freedom of information that we have. But the internet changed all of that, and it allowed people to become aware of what was really going on, what was actually going on. And of course, when you start to see, what you see is that the governments produce information that allows them to present the story that they want that supports their political agenda. And the overpopulation, of course, was one of these things. Oh, there are too many people on the planet, and it's up to us to get rid of them or to reduce the numbers. Well, the question is, of course, who do you start with? Which group do you reduce? Oh, we got too many of those. Oh, we need more of those.
Yeah.
The reality is, as I said, at 7 billion people, the world is very, very sparsely populated. In fact, the vast majority of the world, 98% of the world, has virtually no people in it at all. And yet the image of overpopulation is easily sold, because people all live in groups. They all live together. So you go outside and say, "Oh, everywhere I look, there's people." Well, yeah, but step outside the city and see how far you drive before you run across any people, or fly over northern Canada, or across Russia, or across most of Australia. The majority of the world has less than 2 people per square mile.
You know, if you were to make, if the country, well, U.S. did this, homesteading and, manifest destiny and going west and bring us your tired, hungry poor and we'll ship them west and here's your wagon. So if Canada were to do something like that and here's your 40 acres and a Husky team or something, peace out. Canada might get flooded. I'll go play mountain man. Give me 3 months of freedom in summer and kind of I'll suck it up, to go just be left alone. But freedom is never the answer to these guys. They don't want to give an incentive of just, people will find the solutions on their own. And I think it's going to take hardship. And when it gets really bad, the government will not be there to help you with some handout. It's not going to happen. It's always under that promise. And then you're going to be in a line at the football stadium looking for some water. And when it gets really bad, finally, they'll just cast off this controls and government that's in their way of them surviving, and they'll just do it on their own. But somebody's going to put a stars and stripes on their shoulder and say, "I'm from the government, I'm here to help." And either they get shunned, tarred, and feathered, or, "Oh, please save us," and then you start all over again. So I'm wondering, what is it that, as time has gone on, you look back, we're living in a pretty good time. I mean, we have the technology, we have the awareness, we're living a higher lifestyle than in general, certainly in the freer countries, more than anyone else. But it's also, these tools are there ready to enslave us again in the same way and for the same reasons that we were under monarchies and rule of some despot in the past. And with all these regime change stuff, we just had Daniel McAdams talking about Bolivia in the last hour, and I'm going, yeah, it's like the same battle just new tools, the same battle. The only difference is like with, you know, the Reformation, you know, Martin Luther doing it with the printing press. Now we got the internet. Well, just like they want to ban books and bash printing presses, they want to control you digitally. Well, are they going to be able to? Well, they're sure as hell going to try, you know. So what do you think is the solution, though? You know, we need to what? Yank all kids out of government schools? You know, raise chickens? I mean, you know, what's your solution?
Well, one of the things, of course, is through the education system. Most parents have no idea what their children are being taught in the schools. And that's the first thing where the ordinary citizen can look at. Look at what your children are being taught. Or if you don't have any children, look at your local schools and what's the curriculum and what information are they being provided. You'll find that even in the U.S., it's a very left-wing agenda, a very left-wing point of view of the world. It's overpopulated and blah, 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 and industry's bad and all of these sorts of things. And one of the things that I got involved with was a group called Agriculture in Canada. And what we were trying to do was to say, look, all the textbooks on agriculture in the school system are basically wrong. That we want to get the total information into there, not just what the textbooks that you choose that have been written deliberately to a political perspective. So that's the first thing, is find out what is actually happening. Find out what your children are actually being taught. And then look at who controls the curriculum in the school system, because that's where the problem starts. Ignatius Loyola said it back in the 17th century. He said, give me the child and I'll give you the adult. Well, yeah. Of course, Hitler took that to the extreme with the Hitler Youth, that he produced these little Nazi units of young people, and he knew that if he controlled that, he controlled the adults and the world. So what we need people to do is start looking at what are your children being taught in the school system about world population and about environmental issues, and you'll find it's frighteningly biased.
I am... Are you optimistic? Well, I got to get to my next hour real quick. Are you optimistic? I mean, you know, things have been kind of... It's not this total grease lightning downhill train, oh my God thing. It's kind of plateaued and running out of steam a little bit, maybe? I mean, are you thinking there's another wave of they, them, those are going to, you know, have aliens from Alpha Sin, whatever, descend from genetically bred DNA on the back of the dark side of the moon to get to kind of scare us into some... Nothing surprises me anymore. I mean, they come up with the craziest crap.
Well, I think you started this segment by talking about... information and how it's being disseminated. I happen to think that if everybody believes everything is fake news, that's a very healthy place to start. In other words, start out being not cynical, but skeptical. Just don't believe anything that you're told until you check it out and you get at least three or four other sources that confirm that.
Oh, hell, we got the capability of the, you know, freaking doing the experiment ourselves. I get me an Arduino board and a freaking sensor of the blah, blah, blah. My 12-year-old kid does a science project of calling BS on everybody. I mean, that's where we're going. So I'm like, cool. Yeah. You know, I'm feeling good about that. Hey, I got to get to my next guest. Dr. Paul, thank you very much. I'm so happy it worked out better for you and you got vindicated and you get to have a say and kind of relax. Are you going to be able to enjoy your retirement with your wife a little bit?
Yeah, just remember the old Yiddish proverb, the truth never dies but lives a miserable life.
It hasn't been that miserable, but yeah, you know, at least it keeps your heart a-pumping. Hey, thank you, yeah. Timothy. I really appreciate you coming on again.
Thank you kindly.
Bye-bye, sir.